Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. This verse is one that Christians use most often, perhaps, to justify works of service and charity. It forms the basis for the social justice emphasis the churches like ours embrace. And this verse, and the longer passage of which it is part, represents a sort of extended teaching moment on the part of our teacher, Jesus. It's this window into what we believe is a key element in the nature of God, that the Spirit lives in the least of these. There's a beautiful prayer by Mother Teresa in which she articulated the point of this passage. She prayed, "Mary, Mother of Jesus, give me your heart so beautiful, so pure, that I may love Jesus as you love him and serve him in the distressing disguise of the poorest of the poor." When have you encountered the face of Jesus this past week? The scripture instructs us that we encounter the face of Jesus in the least powerful person, in the refugee, the prisoner, the person who is living on the street, the person who is hungry or thirsty, to name a few. We encounter Jesus in children. Children who do not vote. Children who have little influence in a political system that confirmed Betsy DeVos this past week as U.S. Secretary of Education. A few years ago, the National Council of Churches wrote a pastoral letter about the theological dimensions of public education. And it stated that of their over 45 million members from over 100,000 churches, representing dozens of denominations and a wide array of traditions, all of those people don't agree on much, but National Council of Churches say that they stand united in the conviction that the church is called to speak for justice in public education. And so today, we continue that conversation by affirming that each and every single child is infinitely precious, created in the image of God, every single child. And therefore, every child should be given the opportunity for fullness of life. Public education, meaning education that is publicly funded, universally available, and accountable to the public. Public education is absolutely essential if we are to ensure that each and every child has access to a quality education. As a people, Christians are called to love our neighbors as ourselves. Children are neighbors. They count, right? And though it may be impossible to truly love all children as we love our own children, if we have them, we are undeniably called to advocate on behalf of all children, not only our own, if we have them, and to recognize our responsibility to protect and care for children. Nicole Hannah-Jones is a journalist for the New York Times, and she writes on issues of education and racism. She's also a mom who sends her child to public schools. She writes that for one thing, she can't afford the $40,000 a year it would cost to send her daughter to private school in New York City. But she says for her, that's not really the point. She says, "I honestly don't think that my daughter is more deserving than other kids." For her, it's a moral position. She says, if a school is not good enough for my child, then it's not good enough for any child. And she doesn't want to be complicit in sustaining a system that supports that, right? And so when it comes to education, we look for the optimal way to balance the needs of each particular child and family with the need to create the system that secures the rights and addresses the needs of all children. And it is not an easy task. It's very complex. And we know that such a system will never be perfect. But as people of faith who believe that children are sacred, that's what we strive to do. And it's interesting, this worship service on public education has been planned for months with no intention around coordinating with the events of the past week and the confirmation of Betsy DeVos. It's funny how the Spirit works sometimes. Certainly the recent exposure of public education provides us with a heightened awareness of the issues. And I, like so many of you, are concerned. I'm concerned when we hear the civil right to education being redefined as the right to school choice. Because we know that equal access to education is not solved by choice. With the presence of schools of choice, we must never lose sight of our obligation to serve all children with appropriate services. Just this past week, my partner Lisa had the opportunity to speak directly with Senator Ted Cruz about her concerns regarding public education. Lisa, you rocked it last week with coverage in the Star Telegram and all. It's pretty amazing. Specifically, when Lisa met him, she asked Senator Cruz about vouchers, about schools of choice. And he said that he totally supported them because he believed that it makes all schools better and more competitive. So then Lisa said to him, Senator Cruz, what about, say, a single mom with multiple children who might not even have a car or the means to seek out a private education for her children? And first he looked her in the eye and he said, thank you for that question. It's a very important question. She said that he was quite sincere and genuine. And he went on to say that he too was very concerned about single moms and parents in lower socioeconomic status. But then he said, but if they are dedicated enough as parents, they will get their kids to the school of their choice. It was a response of privilege. You know, privilege is defined as not being able to understand that something is a problem if it's not a problem for you personally, right? For a variety of reasons, not all parents participate in choice when it comes to their children's education. I read another article this week in which families who simply bring their children to register at the neighborhood public school, like you were talking about, those families are referred to as over-the-counter children. You know, many of our children have at some point in our lives or right now been over-the-counter children. We've assumed that universally available and accessible public schools were a staple of the American dream. Of course, it's no longer true. For one thing, there's now tremendous competition to attract students to a range of small schools or charter schools. And as those schools are sought out by parents who are able to be active choosers, what happens to the traditional neighborhood public schools which are left to serve the majority of special education students, English language learners, and homeless children, for example? In this burgeoning field of education resources, competitive, market-based, so-called reforms abound. And they may increase educational opportunity for a few children, maybe even for some groups of children, but they don't make the system itself better able to provide a quality education for all children. This language of business accountability has come to dominate talk about education in our country. And as practices like standardized testing for students and punishments for schools that cannot rapidly enough reach that ever-increasing target for test scores, we've come to equate what is good with what can be measured and compared. And this relentless focus on testing basic skills has also diminished our attention to the humanities, the social studies, the arts, child development. It was Jesus who insisted that children mattered. He said that we are to be like them, if we expect to enter the realm of God. And being followers of a faith that upholds and honors children means that we do not view children as products to be tested and managed. Children are unique human beings created in the image of God to be nurtured and educated. Every single child. Martin Luther King Jr. wrote a letter to his own children, and he said, "I don't want you ever to forget that there are millions of God's children who will not and cannot get a good education, and I don't want you feeling that you're better than they are." And then he said something that really is beautiful, "For you will never be what you ought to be until they are what they ought to be." So in closing, I want to do one more thing. I want you to raise your hand if you are a current or a retired teacher or an administrator for children preschool through 12th grade in a public or private school. Raise your hand if you are any of those things. That is so awesome. Thank you. I have the great pleasure to be married to one, and I know something of the heart and soul that teachers put into their work. And the developments of the past week have been tough for all of us, but maybe especially for teachers. Last week we saw our efforts to influence the political process with our phone calls and our protests and our emails and our social media posts. You know, those efforts just didn't achieve the result we were hoping for. But, you know, we're in for the long haul. Our faith and our citizenship and our children demand our perseverance and our patience. But teachers, all of you who raised your hands, I want to give you something. You've been getting apples for ages, so I wanted first to give you jars of a drink called apple pie in a jar. Claire gave us some for Christmas, and it was great. Apple Pie Plus, you might call it, because it has Everclear in it. But it turns out I was going to make this huge batch, like some moonshiner or something. But it turns out that it has apple cider in it, and you can't buy that easily in stores any longer. So I did something else. I have a basket up here of many different small items that I hope that you'll like, some apple-themed and some not. So during the offertory, as we collect the morning offering, all of you people who raised your hands, I invite you to come forward and choose something out of the goodie basket just as a small token of our deep appreciation for what you do and for who you are. There are those among us in whom we glimpse the holy. Some of them are children and some of them are teachers. And so let us all continue to be their tireless advocates.